Okay.
I'm using the mic today because I just want to make sure my voice will carry. It happens once or twice a year that every Rebbe has the opportunity to address the entire yeshiva and try to inspire you. And my goal really is to inspire each and every one of you. But I'm also a realist. It's very possible that at best, I'll inspire one of you. But that one person could be you. So here it goes. I once heard a lecture from Rabbi Doron Kornbluth. Rabbi Doron Kornbluth wrote a book called Why Marry Jewish. Now, he describes his book with the following idea, the following concept. He said, you would think that if I was writing a book about why marry Jewish, I would tell you how important it is to stay in the fold, how important it is not to assimilate. Of course, we know the Shoah that the Jewish people suffered decades ago can happen through intermarriage, by stopping the procreation and the continuation of the Jewish people. So you'd think it would be religious-based. But the book has nothing to do with religion. It's a book essentially about statistics. And the statistics that he presents in his book and in his lectures are as follows. That statistically speaking, when does a young person make the decision about who they're going to marry? Generally speaking, a person makes the decision about who they're going to marry between the ages of 18 and 24. And the problem is, between the ages of 18 and 24, that's when people like to have the most fun. And there's that conflict of interest, the conflict that goes on inside of most 18-year-olds between the ages of 18 and 24. On the one hand, they want to have fun, have a good time. Many things became legal and accessible to them. But on the other hand, they're also setting the stage for their entire life during those formative years. And that is a challenge. And he says like this, he says that since many people, it happens in college, they're exposed to a lot of non-Jews. And what happens is that they make their life decisions during that period of time. And if it's based on having a good time and having fun, they sometimes end up meeting their potential future spouse during those years. And sometimes, unfortunately, hopefully, Be'ezus Hashem, it should not be relevant to anybody in this room, but they end up intermarrying. And lo and behold, when they're in their 30s, and they wake up, and they have children, and they want to celebrate Hanukkah, and they want to celebrate Pesach, and they turn to their spouse, and their spouse says, yeah, if you want to celebrate Hanukkah and Pesach, I want to celebrate Xmas and Easter. And what happens is a tremendous conflict, and statistically speaking, intermarriages work out far less frequently than same religion marriages. It's the reality. To borrow the yisod of this book and how it applies to us, we hope that intermarriage never comes into the realm of anybody's mind, but it teaches us a tremendous lesson. Between the ages of 18 and 24, we are going to make our most important life decisions. And the question is that what types of values are going to be driving the decisions between the ages of 18 and 24? On the one hand, we just left our parents' houses, essentially. A lot of things, as I said before, became open and accessible to us. And it's an opportunity to have a great time and live life, as they say. But on the other hand, during these years, you're going to decide more or less how religious is going to be on your own. You don't, right? It's not high school. You can't get in trouble with the principal if you're not wearing tzitzis. Right? You're going to decide how religious you're going to be. You're going to decide the type of career path you're going to want to take. And very often you're going to decide the kind of spouse you want to marry. And that is the great challenge. During the years of 18 and 24, when you're all of a sudden, you have this desire, this burning desire to have fun and have a great time, you also have to make the most important decisions of your life that are going to stay with you most of the time until 120. And that's why it's such an amazing opportunity to be here in yeshiva for a year or two. Because there's no greater place, there's no greater environment to really set the stage for your entire life than in yeshiva, like Torah Shraga. You know, I've been teaching the yeshiva about 12 years. I've been exposed to about 1,000 alumni. And there's a very wide spectrum of alumni that have left our yeshiva. We have some young men that have left here, superstars, leaders in their community, rabbanim, who are influencing hundreds of their own students. We have laymen who are people who work 9 to 5, but yet they're learning at 5 o'clock in the morning or learning at night. They're strict in halacha. Amazing, amazing alumni. Amazing people. But unfortunately, we've had a number of alumni who, for lack of a better term, have not necessarily succeeded and fulfilled the dreams that they may have had when they were here in yeshiva, or the dreams that their rebbeim had for them when they were in yeshiva. So I asked myself last year, and I'm asking myself again today, is there something that I could tell you? Is there something that I could enlighten you about, or paint a certain picture in your mind that will somehow inspire you to make very big decisions and right decisions and correct decisions now in your time spent in yeshiva that could hopefully last for a lifetime, that will have a tremendous influence and impact on the rest of your life? And I came up with the following concept. Last year there was no Brian's or Jeff's in the yeshiva. And I double checked again today, and there is apparently no Brian's and Jeff. Although Jeff did leave last week. And I also found out that Jeff's middle name happens to be Brian. So on both accounts, we're in the clear. And I want to highlight 20 different ideas that you'll see a stark contrast between who Jeff is and who Brian is. Again, this is a lot of stereotyping, but it's only in order to share with you a very important message and picture. Number one, Shachris in yeshiva. I believe Shachris in yeshiva is now 7:35 on laning days, 7:45 on non-laning days, if I'm not mistaken. So Jeff is the kind of guy who wakes up at 7:20, comes to davening on time, and he understands the value of davening. Brian, on the other hand, perhaps he oversleeps his alarms, he didn't hear the madrich knock on the door, and he wakes up in the nines, perhaps he davens in his room, perhaps he davens somewhere else, and davening is not that important to him, even in yeshiva. Number two, Jeff is the guy that comes to Seder on time. He goes to the 3 o'clock chabura. He even goes to 6:10. He goes to all the activities in the yeshiva. That's Jeff. Brian, even though he really wanted to come to Israel for the year, everybody's doing it. Seder doesn't start exactly when it's supposed to start. He has to go out in the middle of Shir quite frequently. I'm not sure why. Another example. Example number 3. Summer plans. Right? Jeff is the kind of guy who chooses to go to a place like Camp Hass or Camp Simcha or one of the other camps, and he goes with the objective that he wants to, like Camp Orashah Sports Day, like I said last year. He wants to go and he goes there and he learns a few hours a day and he inspires other young men. And now those are his summer plans. His summer plans are driven by him giving back to the community, inspiring others, working on himself. And then then Brian, on the other hand, he's focused about himself. He wants to go, he wants to get a job. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with going to get a summer job. But besides the fact that he gets a summer job, his free time is spent watching TV, going on the computer, hanging out with his old buddies, etc. Those are his objectives for the summer. Number four, actually. Jeff perhaps decides to come back Shana Bet. He wants to continue to grow. He wants to work on his Gemara skills. He wants to inspire himself. He wants to inspire others. He feels like it's premature to go out and leave yeshiva, leave this environment. And Brian says, Shana Bet? Who needs Shana Bet? I don't enjoy learning. I'm not going to be a rabbi. I'm out of here. Number five. This is, again, just stereotyping, just to paint the picture. Okay, I'm not saying you have to go to yeshiva university. Just imagine that both Jeff and Brian go to YU. And they're both accounting majors. Jeff is the kind of guy who goes to an early Shacharis minyan. That's a slow minyan. He goes to Seder on time. He's involved in his shir. He takes his scholastic studies in the afternoon very seriously. He does very, very well. He has a night Seder. He actually, you know, he washes and benches at the cafeteria with his chaverim. He manages, he's doing great. He's doing great. And Brian, on the hand, comes to a place like YU, and the only thing he's concerned about is his afternoon. In the morning, he comes, he goes, as long as he gets a P, as long as he passes into, you know, the pass-fail grading system, he's happy. He cuts all the corners, but don't worry. When it comes to the afternoon, on every accounting test, he works like a dog. He's there 5 minutes before the accounting class starts, and he takes it very seriously. Girls, how does Jeff approach girls? He understands. Baruch Hashem, at the right time, he's going to get married. He speaks to his rebbein. He decides when's a good age to start looking for a spouse. He has only one interest in having any interaction with girls, and that is for marriage purposes. That's it. Why else does he need to hang out with girls? He has one goal in mind. He understands the significance of the opposite gender. He understands the significance of getting married. But there's a time and a place for everything. And he discusses with his rebbein when to look for a spouse and what to look for in a spouse. Brian, on the other hand, right? Every night, instead of having night sitter in YU, he decides to have night sitter with a shuttle. He takes a shuttle downtown. Why? Because why not? Right? I can. There's nothing wrong with having, you know, 100 platonic relationships. Why not? Number 7. Who do they marry? Who does Jeff marry? Jeff marries a girl who's tsanua, who is Yiras Shemayim, who davens. She's very normal. She has a great personality. She's doing chesed all the time. But she embodies and she symbolizes a certain level of Avodas Hashem that resonates with Jeff. And who does Brian marry? A girl who perhaps who doesn't dress so modestly, a girl who doesn't daven as much, who's not as connected to Kadosh Baruch Hu, who's not as into chesed perhaps. She's more introverted. She's more interested in how she looks and how her life is going. Number 8. How does Jeff's Shabbos table look like? There's Divrei Torah. There's singing. There's stories about Gedolim. Stories about Hashgacha Pratit. There's stories about Emunah. His Shabbos table is exciting. It's a Shabbos table. Brian? So, right, whether he's discussing the latest sporting event, or the latest thing in politics, or Lashon Hara, you know, what do they wear? Jeff wears a nice suit and tie on Shabbos. Brian, you know, he comes from the Suda perhaps, and he's, I don't know what, in his sweatpants. I don't know. So, how do they approach shul on Shabbos? In America, you know, many of the minyanim start at 9 o'clock. Even at 9 o'clock, Brian doesn't come on time. He comes 9:45, 10 o'clock, and he has one objective. Who brought the booze for the Shabbos Club this week? The Kiddush Club this week? Who brought it? That's what he does. He hangs out. He opens up his sitter for a few minutes. That's Brian. Jeff, he's there on time. He goes to Rabbi Shear. We're already up to number 10, so don't worry. We're getting there. Hilchos Shabbos. Right, as the Mishnah Berurah tells us, it's impossible to observe Shabbos if you don't learn Hilchos Shabbos. Borer, which is a halach that oftentimes people are not necessarily familiar with. Jeff's machmir to learn everything. He wants to be a halachic Jew. Brian says, listen, as long as I don't turn on the light and I don't drive the car, Shabbos, I'm good with Shabbos. Don't worry about me. 11. Minyan 3 times a day. I'm again stereotyping. Most people who work in the New York area, or even actually, I know people who work in Teaneck and Passaic also, you'd think that they wouldn't have worker minyan for work men, but they do. In many communities, many places of work, certainly in the city, I don't know exactly what the statistics are. I'm sure within every few blocks, there's another minyan. It's so easy. So of course, Jeff is makbid, the daven mincha with a minyan. Right, no matter what neighborhood you are, okay, if you're an outlying community in Yehupitz, I understand there's no mincha minyan. But I would say, I don't want to say for sure, but I would imagine that 95% of you, or 90% of you, wherever you work in the future, you'll have an accessible mincha minyan. So it's not that big of a mysterious nefesh to go for mincha. So Jeff goes, ma'amish, no problem. And of course, he comes back to his community, goes to late marav, no problem. Brian, mincha? Yeah, that was when I was in yeshiva, when I after the 12:45 shir, when there was mincha, so I examined like this. By 12:51, I was out of there, no problem. Mincha? I'm not staying for mincha. Jeff perhaps learns daf yomi. goes to shiurim. He's into it. And I'm sure in your mind, you can also imagine in your mind that you know, in the communities that you grew up in, the people that embody Jeff and people that embody Brian. Brian's the kind of person, Dafyomi, I left this shiur a long time ago. Shiurim? What's the rabbi going to say anyway? 13. Jeff is full of chesed. He hears his family in need. They need help. He gives them money. If it's not money, he gives them time. He takes care of them. He really cares about his neighbors. You know, Brian's more focused on his own family. Stalker. Jeff is machmir to give Meister 10% of his income right away. He even has a separate account. He makes sure he's machmir. He understands the concept that the more Meister money you give, aser kadesh tzadash, the more stalker you give, the more wealthy you will be. Brian, when somebody, one of his friends says, "Oh, I'm being honored at dinner. Can you please give an ad?" He's like, "Okay, fine. I'll give you an ad. What's the cheapest ad?" "Okay, fine. That's what I'll give you." That's his mahalach. That's his approach. Football. Jeff is normal. He likes football. He has a favorite team, and every given Sunday, what does he do? He watches his team for 3 hours. Oh, Jeff? I thought he's not good at Minyan. I thought he learned in Dan Miller. Yes, he is normal, and he watches his team. Brian, on the other hand, what's his approach to football? Oh my gosh, I'm usually very machmen and very careful never to go over time. But okay, hopefully I'm gonna speed up the pace over here. 12:30, NFL game day. In my day, it was Mike Tirico, Chris Berman, and Deion Sanders. Is that still the case? Chris Berman, Mike Tirico, and Deion Sanders still NFL game day starts at 12:30. Okay, which guys are probable this week? Which guys are possible this week? Which guys are doubtful? Right? Who's questionable? That's how he starts. He watches the 1 o'clock game, the 4 o'clock game, the 8 o'clock game, and the post game show. Somebody told me this last year that it's possible to be watching football or the shows from 12:30 p.m. to 1 a.m. Crazy, Pasha, crazy. I mean, and then somebody told me last year, this is a quote from last year, that he spent 72 hours on his fantasy football team each week because he's in three different leagues and in three different teams. Jeff enjoys football. He understands that football is an outlet. It's an entertainment. Chinuch of their children. Jeff learns with his children. He's interested in his children, how they're learning Gemara and Chumash. And Brian? What college are they going to go to? I want to see results. I want to go to the best colleges. That's the only thing. Gemara, it's okay. The colleges don't care about what you get in Gemara. How do they speak? Jeff is the kind of person who has a clean mouth. He's a filtered internet. He talks with respect to others. He doesn't use foul language. A real Bamidbar. Brian, right? His language leaves a lot to be desired. He's a rampant Lashon Hara speaker. He shows little respect for his elders. And probably he scolds people in shul. He's very easily agitated. 18. Jeff is extremely faithful to his spouse. There's not even a shemitz, not even a doubt of faithfulness. And Brian, unfortunately, there are many, many question marks. Family vacations. Again, they're not. Jeff is normal. He needs a family vacation. He's not restricting himself from pleasure. He goes on a family trip to Israel. They go to the Kotel. They go to Kibbutz Rachel. They go to meet Rabbanim. Brian's family, ultimate winter vacation, Aruba. Aruba, that's where they go. They go 10 days to Aruba. They sit there and they relax. I'm not saying there's anything inherently wrong. That's his family vacation. 20, and this will end. Jeff's son wants to come back Shana Bet. And Jeff says, "Bevakasha, you gave me the greatest nachas. I am so happy. I'm so proud of you. You want to go back Shana Bet? I'm excited. You for sure go back Shana Bet." Brian's son wants to come back Shana Bet. "What? Again? What's going to be with you? When are you going to go in the real world? I'm going to spend money on Shana Bet for you? You can't go. What, you want to become a rabbi?" That's Brian. Now, obviously, a lot of these examples were quite humorous. And obviously, they're not going to apply exactly to each and every one of us in the room. No question about that. But the ideas and the concept and the frame of mind and the outlook on life, I think, is very true. In many, many life decisions, you're going to be like, should I go to the Jeff side, the Brian side? Where should I go? And over the next few months here in Yeshiva, hopefully the next few of those years, Shana Aleph, next year or so, you're going to have the opportunity to build your value system. And we hope and pray, each and every one of the Rebbeim and myself, We really hope and pray that each and every one of you develop a value system that's much more in line with Jeff. Now the question is why? And what's the difference? If I ask you two questions, whose Olam Haba is going to be greater, Jeff's or Brian's? And question number two is, who's Olam Hazeh? Who's this world is going to be greater and more enjoyable? Will it be Jeff's or will it be Brian's? To focus on the Olam Haba side, I think everybody would agree that Jeff's Olam Haba is going to be far superior and far better than that of Brian's. And if you'll ask me, who cares? Olam Haba is Olam Haba. I want to tell you a quick story. See, I'm running out of time. Larry David is the producer of Seinfeld, if I'm not mistaken, and he once came across a rabbi, Daniel Mechanic, and he wanted to hear from him about his ideas in Jewish philosophy. He flew him out to Los Angeles, took him out to lunch in a place called Pat's, and said, "Rabbi Mechanic, prove to me there's a God." And Rabbi Mechanic turned to Larry David and said, "Prove to me there is no God." And they went back and forth. "There's a God, prove to me there's no God." So Rabbi Mechanic told him what's called Pascal's Wager. And he said, "Listen, when are we going to find out who's right and who's wrong? If there is a God or if there isn't a God, when is he going to find out?" "After he dies." "So now," says Rabbi Mechanic, "let's say I'm wrong and you're right. Let's say there is no God. I come to Shemayim and I spent the last 120 years serving Hashem, doing nice things, learning Torah, doing mitzvot. And I come to Shemayim and there's nothing there. Did I lose anything? Absolutely not. But woe is to you if I'm right and you're wrong. After 120 years you come and say, 'Oh, life is good, I indulged, I had a great time. It wasn't just happy crush, a lot of indulgence. A lot of great things happened, I enjoyed in life.' And you come up there and you're like, 'Whoa.' And you stand before the King of all kings, Melech Malchim, love him, and it's not going to be good. So if you follow this Mahalach, that Olam Haba and the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is something that will be proven afterwards, it certainly tells us and teaches us we should follow the ways of Jeff. We have much more to lose by indulging and going in the wrong direction than if you go in the right direction. If you go in the right direction, we can only gain or stay neutral. If we go in the wrong direction, chas v'shalom, we certainly stand only to lose. But I think it's much more than that. That's a lo lishma bo lishma level. That's on a Yiras Hashem level. That idea that certainly we don't want to indulge if we're going to get, for lack of a better term, burned in the next world. But I think one of the primary message we try to go over in the yeshiva this year, and in the 2 years that we hope most of you are here, is the following idea. That forget Olam Haba. The Olam Haba is huge and Olam Haba is pashut. But it's the Olam Hazeh. Can it be that a person who needs to watch football from 12:30 p.m. to 1 a.m. is enjoying life? It just means he has nothing else going on in his life. And I think the biggest proof is that what happened with fantasy football, when I was growing up, which wasn't so long ago, you had your team, you watched the game, that was it. Okay? But what happened with this whole fantasy thing is that you don't even have a team anymore. It doesn't mean anything. It's just, we want to, and also another big thing that I heard on the shrews from last year is that in my days, Thursday football was only the Thanksgiving weekend. Now, from what I understand, Thursday night football is an automatic. Why? Because they have to be able to entertain people from Monday, actually from Thursday all the way to Monday. Because it was too much without football. It was only one game. I heard also, there's two games now on Monday night, if I'm mistaken. Is that true? No, it's usually one that sometimes. Okay, whatever. But it wasn't, people need to be entertained because they're bored. You're not missing it out. You're not missing out. When you think about how you, the experience, the excitement, I want to say one more thing. This will close, I hope. Actually, let's say two more things. If you watch the video and energy of the guys after the 4,000 block were finished, I want to ask you a question. Is there anybody who can tell me the night? I don't think so. I don't think so. Is there anybody here that can tell me that the simcha that you felt, perhaps at a good kumsitz or at a good seder after a good learning session, can even that any other simcha or rave or anything like that can even come close to the simcha that a person can have in the Beis Medrash or in something that's ruchni? Certainly not. The Olam Haza that you could have, the excitement and the enjoyment you get in this world, is exponentially greater if you follow Torah mitzvahs besides the Olam Haba issue. And with this, I'll close. And a person may say, "You know, Rabbi, big deal. If I give up, if I follow the ways of Brian and not the ways of Jeff, nothing's going to make it. Nothing. It won't make a difference. I will have to live after an Albion. But I want to tell you the following statistic. The following idea. Hashem, Kodesh Baruch Hu, bless each and every one of you, and I'm going to give you an average now. But if everybody, if you follow the averages, and you are blessed with four children, and your four children are blessed with four children, and your 16 grandchildren are blessed with four children each, that means that you can see, this is average, 64 descendants while you're still alive. So I ask you, if you make a decision to follow the ways of Brian, and say, you know what, Rabbi Al-Mahava, whatever, Al-Mahaza, no, I don't need it, no problem. But do you know the life decision that you make now between the ages of 18 and 24? Do you know what kind of impact that can have on 64 people, let alone if they continue with the average up to 128? HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bless us with Ziyata Dishmaya to make all the right decisions at all the right times. Have an amazing day and an amazing life.